Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Vero, and today we're talking about addressing in-work poverty with Linda Riddle, MS, an epidemiologist specializing in poverty and social economic status issues, and the founder of Get In By, a Maine Technology Institute grant-funded training that combines socioeconomic research with board game mechanics to change how players understand poverty and teach best practices for improving the likelihood and health outcomes for individuals they serve. Welcome, Linda, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
You and I have already had the opportunity to speak some, and also for me to learn more about Get In By and the process itself. One of the things I'd love to focus on kind of during the course of today's show is the role that employers can play kind of in addressing in-work poverty. And I think it's important that we start with the premise that if you're listening to the show right now, we are presuming that you are paying your employees at or above a livable wage. And when I say at or above a livable wage, I'm not talking about a minimum wage. I'm talking about a livable wage. So Linda and I, and if you could see her, she's shaking her head vigorously. All of this show is on that premise. So I'm going to ask Linda to introduce herself, tell a little bit about her background, and then we're really going to dig into the topic because I know that those of you who are listening probably have big questions about this topic, whether or not you're seeing it with parts of your employee base, or you're simply aware that this is a problem that does exist. So Linda, tell me a little bit about you and how you, you know, get to a point where you create Get In By and also just specializing in poverty and socioeconomic status issues.
Yeah, I got interested in poverty and health in graduate school. It's so fascinating, the mashup of the biology and the social and the economic and the emotional and the community. It's just so fascinating to me how all of those things come together. And what I found was that what's known in the science about social economic status and health and lifespan and all kinds of different things is not known generally. So there were studies that started in the 60s that found that British civil servants who, as they went up the civil service ladder, so to speak, their risk of dying went down and their health status improved, regardless of what else they did, like, you know, couch potato, marathon, whatever. So it's the environment that interacts with your health status, and your environment changes as your work changes. So that was really interesting to me. So I made sort of a personal goal to bridge this gap between what science knows and what the world takes as knowledge.
And, you know, one of the interesting things about kind of that premise, too, is I feel like news and media doesn't help kind of anything that you're saying. I feel like the headlines really focus in on individuals' choices as being indicative of poverty, but that, you know, has nothing to do with it, correct? And let's talk a little bit about that.
So there's, if it's okay, I'll use wellness programs as an example. So wellness programs focus, like you say, on individual behaviors, and not the environment that the person is living in. It's one of my favorite studies of all time. It was a randomized control trial, and people were assigned randomly to the Mediterranean diet or their usual diet. Okay. And so high income people, medium income people, low income people were randomly assigned to this. And the study provided the food for the Mediterranean diet. Okay. The high income people got some heart health benefit from the Mediterranean diet. The low income people got no benefit for heart health. And it's because the diet improved, but their environment that they're living in didn't change. And their environment has a much stronger impact on their cardiovascular health than their diet. So it's true if you have control over your housing. So if you have a mortgage, if you have a work schedule that's predictable, if in your workday you have some control over your workload or how you accomplish your work, if you have all of those things, you have a lot of assets for your health. If you don't have those things, you don't. And where your health is an interaction between your environment and your biological body, the environment kind of wins. So trying to convince people to do more sit-ups or take more walks or something after work, A, generally programs don't convert people from couch potatoes to marathon runners, but B, if their psychosocial environment of their workday doesn't give them control, doesn't give them autonomy, all of those things, it's not going to improve their health.
So so kind of overarching, we've got some of these really big concepts that are not widely known more generally. And even people I think who maybe have heard some of these statistics or heard some of this data have likely lost that knowledge base because so often we hear from popular culture, from the media, kind of very different messaging. At some point, you decide to create this game, Gettin' By. Tell me a little bit about how that developed and why, I guess.
So the British civil servants study that I mentioned, the gentleman who led those studies developed this theory that the social economic status impact and poverty's impact is on the brain. And therefore, you can't change the health without changing the inputs that are happening. So a person in poverty has a chronically overwhelmed brain. So I like to say survival competes with survival for mental space. This is why the pandemic was stressful for people, because you had to think about things you never had to think about before. So there was more things literally on your mind, more things to try to keep track of. Well, that's the chronic case for a person coping with poverty. It affects how your brain works. So you do not have, I should say it this way, it's called executive function is impaired. Your executive function does planning, analysis, that type of thing. So the classic thing is for people who are not in poverty to look at people who are and say, oh, they make bad decisions. So knowing that every human brain responds to overwhelm in the same way, I wanted to create an experience for people to be overwhelmed.
Which is some
So,
people, I'm sure we have some listeners who are like, wait a second, Tani, why am I going to play a game in which I'm overwhelmed when I already feel overwhelmed in my day to day? And
yes.
yeah.
Yes. So the reason is, and I'm not saying that higher income jobs are not stressful or a walk in the park. No, not the case. The difference is that person has more control over their environment, over how they respond. They have a different kind of relationship with work and respect and all of that. That's the difference. So what the game does, and it's modeled after social science laboratory experiments that overwhelm the brain. There's a time limit. You have resources to make decisions with that are limited. You don't have any power over what situation the game presents you with. So it's all of those things coming together. So you are forced to only focus on the immediate. So nutrition people will play and they will do the fast food drive-through.
Yeah, I mean, something that I'm sure that in their real life, kind of they would say never do this, or constantly are
Right.
telling people not to do it, and then they get into the game, and that is one of the things that go, just because they don't have, I would guess, capacity to do all the
Right.
things that are necessary to make a healthy meal, whether it's grocery shopping, planning, all of those things.
Right. Right. So they see themselves, and I don't really prep people before they play to say, this is what's going to happen. I just sort of kick it off and then I ask them, so what happened? So that's the point. Their brain, given similar pressures, make decisions that are, quote, bad. So I've had a lot of physicians play, and several have hung up the phone on their physician. So
In the game
in the
itself,
game,
right? In a
yes.
in this hypothetical conversation
Yes.
that they hang up the
Right.
phone
They have to make
on
a
the person
choice.
who's
They
trying
have
to help.
30 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get it in a very different way. I had a pediatrician who played once saying that he used to get angry at his Medicaid patients for not showing up to appointments. But now, after playing, he sees they have so many more important things to do.
Yeah. So this leads to probably a broader topic that, I think we've touched on a little bit, but I think we probably have many listeners who are saying, what do we mean when we say in work poverty? What does that mean? Like, how can one truly be in poverty if I, as an employer, are paying at or above a livable wage?
Yeah.
And again, for those who just joined us, right, we're talking not about a minimum wage, but we're talking about at or above a livable wage for the locations in which your organization operates. So if you, as an employer, are paying at or above a livable wage, what is in work poverty, and is it an issue that all employers should be concerned about?
So, I'll give an example of a colleague of mine works with college campuses. So let's say your employee is the first of his family to get an associate's degree. Okay. You're paying them a livable wage. His family, he has somewhat separated himself from his family by getting an education. So he's already a little bit apart. Oftentimes, to compensate for that, he or she makes themselves available to help out family members. And family members will need a reliable car. They will need help getting to the doctor, to the pharmacy. One of the scenarios in the game is your sister needs a ride to the methadone clinic every day. And as long as she stays in treatment, she gets to keep custody of her kids. That's the kind of thing. So that family looks to, oh, here's our richer relative
Yeah.
who can help us out. And relationships are obviously very, very important. So that employee may have those kinds of things playing in their background.
Linda, no, thank you so much. That's a really good kind of understanding of it. It is time for us to take a really quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today we're talking about addressing in-work poverty with Linda Riddle, MS, an epidemiologist specializing in poverty and socioeconomic status issues, and founder of Get In By, a Maine Technology Institute grant-funded training that combines socioeconomic research with board game mechanics to change how individuals understand poverty and teach best practices for improving the livelihood and health outcomes for individuals who are living in poverty. For those of you who are just joining us, you know, the whole discussion that we're having today really has a premise in the fact that if you're an employer who's looking to help employees who are living in work poverty, the first step is you need to be paying above a livable wage. So not above a minimum wage, but above a livable wage for the locations in which you live in. And then the next step is to better understand what poverty itself looks like, and then in-work poverty, and the fact that this isn't a choice. This isn't just a whole host of bad choices that employees are making. So Linda, as it relates to this misconception about choice, who is most vulnerable to in-work poverty? I mean, you mentioned prior to the break a situation with first generation associate's degree and kind of how they then interact with the rest of their family. As an employer, sometimes we're not going to have all that information, but what would some other bases be for an employer to understand, gosh, this person may be vulnerable to in-work poverty?
So someone who is late, someone who misses and sick, that could be a flag to say, wonder what else is going on. Having a respectful work environment would include, in my mind, accommodating life stuff. So if a person needed to help their family member go to a court hearing, having the ability to make up the lost work time, for example, would be huge. Instead of the person having to choose between losing work time or helping their family, a person who has grown up in poverty will err toward helping their family. And they may not even ask for this flexibility, even if the employer has it and is welcoming of it. They may hesitate to ask for it because they may have a heritage of don't tell them anything, you know, don't tell them our business, that kind of thing. So they may.
And when you say they tell them their business, you mean that employees oftentimes will have this mindset to keep private home life issues kind of out of the workplace, not reveal, hey, the reason I'm late is because, you know, my landlord isn't taking care of frozen pipes, and so we didn't have water this morning. Or, hey, you know, my car continuously keeps breaking down because I'm unable to, you know, insert whatever need that car has because it's not a priority financially because food on the table is going to come before that.
Right. Those are great, great examples. Yeah. Not being in control of your home, you know, being a renter actually is a health risk factor.
Are there ways that employers can help employees maybe feel either safer to share some of this information or provide a path in which employees can share it without oversharing?
Yep. Model it.
What do you mean from that standpoint?
So if their supervisor, for example, says, I'm going to be late tomorrow morning because a plumber, you know, my landlord is sending in a plumber and I don't want to leave them alone in my apartment. And that's okay. And if you have something like that, you don't have to tell me the details. Just let me know you're going to be late. The major thing, aside from that kind of flexibility and acknowledging that the employee is a human being with other things going on, is in the workplace itself, small things go a long way. So for example, if the company lost one of its biggest clients, telling the employees, even telling the employees that senior management doesn't know exactly how we're going to respond to this, but we are working on it and we're going to tell you as soon as we know, everyone's blood pressure just went down. So keeping people informed, having respect, and to the largest extent possible, allowing employee input, allowing and welcoming employee input about how the work is accomplished. So having some sense of mastery over one's workday is a huge asset. It sounds like for someone who's in an in-work poverty situation that I just added more stress to their plate, No, not if you give them some sense of autonomy and mastery over what they're doing. That will help.
So if we I'm sure that some individuals who are listening are saying to themselves, this all sounds a little too touchy-feely, and I understand employees have things going on at home. I honestly don't want to know about it. Why should employers kind of care about this? Does it have an effect on productivity or on an employer's bottom line in any sense?
If the company has a certain type of position where there's a lot of turnover, that's a sign that people cannot manage the position and their lives, or that the requirements that the company has, say it's a call center, and so being on the phones for certain hours is really important. Understood, understood. If in addition to that, there is, and these are kind of well-meaning things that lead to poorer results. Say there's a prize for the person who handles the most calls in a day, or something along those lines. So, and one person always wins.
Yeah, productivity bonuses, where the productivity bonus always goes to your higher performer, I think in a lot of situations is not achieving the result that an employer may think it's going to. But let's say hypothetically that we do have, call center environment, productivity bonus, where for the last 6 months the same person keeps on kind of taking that prize.
And so you've got 99% of the people in that competition pool discouraged. I can't win here. I can't stand out. I can't have an accomplishment here. And effort recognition is really important part of the environment that the company creates. And it won't necessarily, it's not going to change the person's economic status. It doesn't have to be a bonus. It can be just recognition. And that helps.
Recognition, what do you like for what? Just like thank you for coming in today. Thank you for being here. I mean, because in part, a lot of companies are like, it's productivity or like we have metrics in some format. And creating different metrics for different employees is a
Oh,
form of
not practical.
discrimination and problematic. So thoughts on kind of what does that look like? Is it just having good leaders who are providing positive reinforcement?
I like that. I heard of one, I think it was actually a call center. They had weekly, and I think they called it something like Lucky Lemons or something. So everyone talked about the team met, and they had this very informal competition about who had the most irate or most ridiculous call. That kind of camaraderie, I mean, it sounds very trivial, maybe. And it sounds like, oh, how does this help the company? But it's important that the major thing that a company does that affects the employees' welfare, aside from paying them enough, which we've emphasized, is what's called the psychosocial environment of work. So my example of losing the biggest client and the senior management doesn't know what to do yet, oftentimes a company will say, okay, so let's not tell anybody anything. That's toxic.
I mean, it's interesting because I think most companies say we're not going to tell anyone anything because we don't want panic. We don't want people to get more anxious than they need to be. And so what you're indicating is that the information itself is going to be helpful to employees because it's a modeling behavior. Is that correct?
I mean, not knowing is worse than knowing that it's getting worked on. Much worse. And a person, so the other thing about a person in work poverty, if they, I'm gonna put sort of posit that they grew up in poverty, they don't know anyone who has a positive relationship to work. They may not know anyone. They may not know anyone who has ever gotten a promotion at work. So the relationship to work is more about you do what they tell you, so they put a dollar in your pocket. And say that person with the associate's degree is trying to form a different relationship with work. But when he goes home for Sunday dinner, his people will say, oh, you know, those people, they're just, you know, you think you have a good job, but they're just using you. You know, they're going to do X, Y, and Z. He's still got that message going on in the background.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting kind of the how much the nature nurture kind of aspect of all this plays into how behavior at work is viewed from different lenses. And, you know, some managers may take the same task or behavior and it's going to be viewed from different lenses depending on who is hearing it. And that attaboy for maybe some of your higher performers who are socioeconomically stable or above average is like, oh, can you believe it? All they said was attaboy versus, right. Yeah, I mean, somebody who is, you know, lower socioeconomically or living in poverty, you know, where that really can be a very bright spot in day, week, you know, just a really tough time more generally.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back. And I really want to talk a little bit more on ways in which we can bring control to employees more generally, because I do think there's the misnomer about, like, you know, poverty is within the control of employees, and really stepping back and helping employers really understand that, you know, that is a misnomer, that that's not correct, a correct assumption for them to be making. So for those of you who have just joined us, you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today we're talking about addressing in-work poverty. Linda Riddle, MS, an epidemiologist, is our guest today, and she specializes in poverty and socioeconomic status issues. She's also the founder of Gettin' By, a Maine Technology Institute grant-funded training that combines socioeconomic research with board game mechanics to change how players understand poverty and to teach best practices for improving the livelihood and health outcomes for the individuals they serve. Linda, you and I, our whole conversation is based off of a premise that employers are paying employees at or above a livable wage, not a minimum wage, but a livable wage, because that is going to be one of the first big important steps to help people move out of in-work poverty. Another focus of our discussion, though, has been on one word, control. And I would say a good portion of today's discussion has really been based off of control. And if you're only just joining us, you probably presume that I mean the choices that individual employees make. But in fact, that is not what we mean when we talk about control. Instead, we mean the things that employers can be doing to assist employees in feeling more control in their life. And you mentioned previously kind of modeling that behavior, sharing information when you have it, even though you may have concerns that it could kind of cause some type of panic or anxiety, but instead it has the opposite effect because they have that control. Let's talk a little bit about employee suggestion programs. How is that, how is that helpful to what we're discussing?
One of the dynamics around poverty, especially generational poverty, is lack of hope. So feeling that I can't really do much to improve my situation. So now you're talking about an employee who is making a livable wage, but still has that in their heritage. And may have family members who are still in that life, in that frame of mind. So having an opportunity to make a difference. So an employee suggestion program is awful if the suggestions never get a response. And
that's just in general. I'm going to throw that out there just in general, not even as we're looking at this, like in-work poverty and helping to rectify it, but just in general, you know, I would agree with you that, like, let's not create something where, you know, suggestions go into a black hole. Sorry for interrupting, but I wanted to make
absolutely.
Sure we were very clear.
Yes. So being able to see that I can offer something, it has value. It brings a response. I can make a difference in our work. All good things, all very good things in terms of giving a person a sense of control. Companies that have a structure and a sort of top-down sort of style that we provide the scripts, we provide the, you know, we do everything and they just have to execute. That's a recipe for a high turnover job. It sort of echoes the kind of lack of control, lack of hope, lack of impact that the heritage from poverty has provided, if that makes sense.
No, I think it absolutely does, because they're, you know, I'm being heard, my voice is being heard, as opposed to kind of, I think most people who find themselves in hopeless situations feel as though they lack control, that it doesn't. And I think we see it, you know, we're taping this in an election year. And I think one of the big concepts that comes out about voter turnout is people who don't believe that kind of their one voice has meaning or saying. And, you know, I don't want to take us into a political role when we're talking about poverty, but it also plays a role, I think, in who shows up at a voter box as to where they are socioeconomically.
Right. Right. And the going back to the brain, the overwhelmed brain doesn't have room for the future. So people, I use smoking as an example. So if you have a very stressful, overwhelming day-to-day life, the calming part of smoking is very valuable, and you don't have room for some iffy, distant prospect of lung cancer. Just doesn't. So whenever I'm with physicians, I say, I don't bother to work on quitting smoking. It's too important. Work on something that will give them some sense of control or mastery in their lives. Give them an opportunity for mastery.
In your experience, is there a way to test as to whether or not employees want kind of more of that autonomy? Because in a lot of situations, mm-hmm. we're not going to know somebody's living in work poverty, right? So I know that there's some people who say, like, I love my job because I am working to live, not living to work. I like to go to work, have them tell me what to do. I am safe within my means. You know what I mean? Like, I'm middle income, healthy in all regards in which I guess society would measure health. Is there a way to understand whether or not your employee wants some more of that autonomy? And is it in a direct conversation, which seems like it may make sense, or are there other ways to communicate?
So the environment that you're asking in. So if this company has had this top-down military type management, in that environment, asking employees, would you be interested in shaping your workload? They're more likely to say no, because the environment, they know the environment really isn't there.
That it's not gonna, if they do have more autonomy, are they just more likely to be out of a job because it's more militant and they're gonna screw something up and then be fired?
Right. There's some saying, I think it's Japanese, the nail that is higher gets hammered down, something like that. So the environment needs to be there. And you can invite people to give feedback, offer suggestions, take more autonomy. They don't have to take you up on it. But virtually everyone. So the British Civil Servant Study found every step up that ladder improved health and decreased mortality. So anyone in the spectrum could improve their health status, essentially. But for people who are coming from poverty, it has a much larger ripple effect than I think than someone who grew up middle class.
So, you know, we've talked about some like effort reward imbalances and employee suggestion programs. We're talking from a basis that we're paying above or at a livable wage. Are there other benefits that maybe more traditionally fall in like an employee benefit program that have value when we're talking about these situations?
Probably the number one thing for someone who is coming from a heritage of poverty. In poverty, relationships are the important asset, so to speak. And Donna Beagle, in her institutes, she calls this oral culture. Relationships are the focus versus print culture, where knowledge is more of the asset base. So when you have somebody who is relationship focused, flexibility of time is the best asset you could give them, so that they are not choosing between their family and their livelihood. Nope. That's the number one thing.
Really helpful, kind of understanding how important community is as we're looking at these issues. And with hope, you know, I think we see more that when someone has community, that it's easier for them to uncover, to be their authentic self. Some of the larger concepts that we talk about more generally when we talk about a positive workplace culture. So that's helpful that it kind of serves multiple purposes there. It's time for us to take another short break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Today, I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it? That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you. Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today we're talking about addressing in-work poverty. Our guest is Linda Riddle, MS, and an epidemiologist who specializes in poverty and social economic status issues. She's also the founder of Gettin' By, a Maine Technology Institute grant-funded training that combines socioeconomic research with board game mechanics to change how players understand poverty and teach best practices for improving the livelihood and health outcomes for the individuals who are living in work poverty. Linda, you know, we've had such a robust conversation today, and I really appreciate your time and kind of sharing this knowledge base with everyone. If you were to kind of hone in or say what's the single most important, I think it's so tough in a concept that is this large, but what's the single most important thing that an employer needs to realize when we're talking about this issue? And I'm going to take one potential answer off your plate completely, with the understanding that first and foremost, paying above a livable wage is a necessity. And if you're not doing that, that needs to be your focus first. But let's presume that our listeners are paying at or above a livable wage. What's most important for an employer to do?
The most impactful thing that an employer can do to improve employees' health and well-being is the work environment. So when you think of health as being, as I've said, the interaction between your environment and your physical body. Wellness programs tend to focus on individual behaviors that happen outside work, and they ignore the fact that the person spends half of their waking hours in a work environment. So making that environment, and I don't mean healthful, like serve bagels instead of donuts kind of thing. I mean, some of the things that we've been talking about, like having policies that respect employees as human beings, having inviting and welcoming input from employees to make work flow better. So having that as a partnership and creating that environment, employees will live longer. Seriously.
No, it is crazy to think kind of how large scale some of the results of small behaviors can be as we're talking about this topic more generally.
Yeah.
Linda, this has been really wonderful. Some of our listeners are likely going to want to get in touch with you and learn more about Gettin' By. How can they do that?
The website is gettinby.net, gettinby.net.
Perfect. So they can learn, go to that website, learn more about you, learn more about the game itself, and with hope kind of have a better understanding. You've got some really good resources up there about better understanding in-work poverty and ways in which employers can work to address it. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I know I walked away with a lot more information than I previously had, and I think our listeners did as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.